Welcome to Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. You've just listened to our theme music from Joe Cocker, his track called Respect Yourself. I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and Mental Health Radio promotes a mental healthiness and is brought to you and funded by Ember Wellbeing Trust. So today's show is a bit different. In fact, so different that we haven't done this before. Broadcaster James King, who is a regular on the show these days, he's on the phone from Hamilton and is going to interview me from a distance about my experiences over the past 4 months. Yesterday, I promoted this show in this way. I said, "The worst 4 months of my life is how I describe experiences since July 15. 6 weeks in hospital, 2 ambulance deliveries to the emergency department at Auckland Hospital in just 10 days, and harrowing anxiety most of the time. Getting through it is such a relief." This is what I said yesterday in the promotion, and I said, "Here are a few tips on how to survive and get through." And that's exactly what John Kirwan says on his website, depression.org.nz. When I wrote this and sent it out on email and Facebook yesterday, I was feeling strong emotionally. Today is a slightly different story. It's amazing how our emotional, or my emotional and mental strength, can wax and wane. Perhaps I overdid it yesterday in the knowledge, at least yesterday anyway, that I was back to my articulate and functioning self, confident that I could throw myself back into life helter-skelter. So yesterday I had 2 meetings, a game of tennis, teeing up, seeing a number of people I hadn't seen for a while, and clearly I need to move more slowly and monitor how much I'm doing. Also, in thinking about today's broadcast, I've realised that the degree of my worry and anxiety is probably quite extreme, and perhaps my experience in the past months is far from typical. Well, anyway, here goes with James in the hot seat. Take it from us with a great difference. James, welcome to Take It From Us. You're there in the hot seat.
Tenakwe, and I'm glad you've put me in the hot seat so I can ask you some penetrating questions.
Well, I may or may not be ready for penetrating questions, but let's see.
Well, I thought we'd look at this from the angle of experience, strength and hope. What is your experience? What was your experience from July 15 to now?
Well, I guess we probably need to go back before July 15, when I was clearly overdoing it, trying to be all encompassing. I was hosting many international guests on Airbnb, landscaping a property on Waiheke Island and supervising a lot of work there. I was obviously working on the radio show, following my hobbies and pursuits like tennis and bridge and other things. And sort of suddenly realised that I was overdoing it. There was the occasional trigger. I had a little bit of anxiety. But suddenly I dipped very badly without any warning. And that fueled my depression. And
so you just woke up one day and it was all too much, or were there warning signs?
Well, I think there definitely were warning signs, James, but I somehow avoided those. There were occasions of sort of anxiety which I should have taken notice of, and I thought I was bulletproof. I had been flourishing and functioning very well for about 2.5 years. I was actually in a cafe with a friend of mine not far from Planet FM, and I just sort of got into a major sweat, and I guess that was the first sign that I wasn't well.
I was going to ask you what sort of manifestations, what physical and sort of mental manifestations anxiety takes in your case.
Well, certainly at the start, I began sweating in this cafe. I suddenly realised that this was sort of the onset of something pretty serious. The anxiety started soon after that. And I guess I really sort of panicked that this was another episode which could easily take me out. That wasn't, of course, the right sort of thinking to prevent it from happening. But I think I just burnt myself out and didn't have the resources to counter it.
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting comment, Sheldon, because one of the things I've always thought about you, and we've known each other for the better part of 10 years now, is that you're an active relaxer. You relax by doing things, but it sounds as though you were overdoing it to the extent where it brought on this anxiety. Would that be a fair assessment?
I'd say that's a very accurate assessment.
And you're hard on yourself, aren't you?
Yes, and quite a number of people have said that to me over the last over this last period of 4 months, that I am quite hard on myself. I guess I very definitely have a fear of failure. And, you know, when there is an indication, a hint that things are going to turn to custard, I think that fear of failure sort of kicks in.
But doesn't that, I was just going to add there, hiya James, Declan here, as you know, I was just going to add on there how when you have what you perceive as failure, you learn from that, and I think you've got to go through sometimes that to realise where you were, but if you're learning something from it and progressing out of it, I don't see failure as failure as such. It's a learning process that you go through.
Well, I've learned in the last couple of weeks that it's all right to do between 0 and 100, and that's 0% and 100%. I guess up until a couple of years ago, I like to do things at 100% and be sort of very successful, and I think that's stressful in itself, James.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting, isn't it, that we feel on top of the world, we're doing things where... I have the same situation here with my painting and my writing and doing this show and other bits and pieces as well, that it can sneak up on you.
Wow,
And that, it sounds like it snuck up on you.
Absolutely. I think how one monitors... that those triggers, how one takes them seriously, is so important in preventing the extreme sort of events and episodes that I've had over the last 4 months.
I think the big thing too there, I was just going to say, is we have our expectations, but are they necessary what others have for us? So whereas other people are quite happy to see us on, say, a 5, we expect to be on a 10. So we set ourselves up with too high expectations. I guess it's a bit like where you go, what do they call that, dancing, where they bring the things down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know, of course, what other people's expectations of us are unless they actually outline them.
That's a very key point, actually, Sheldon, because you're right. We don't know what other people are thinking about us. In fact, In fact, more often than not, they're not thinking about us. They're thinking about their own life and their own things that are going on. So it's very difficult to determine what the expectations are from other people. But it's, to me, it's about the way you think about yourself.
Well, that, I guess, is one of the areas that I've been working on. A number of people have said, well, it's very important to love yourself. And I think if you love yourself, then it boosts your independence. It boosts your ability to live on your own and cope on your own.
I think you're in a very interesting position because, as I say, I've known you for the best part of a decade, and you give a lot of yourself to family, to friends, to this show. You're a sort of a pillar, if you like, for many people. I know you've been a pillar that I've rested on a number of occasions. Does that give you that sort of interaction, give you some strength?
Well, I think I've done a lot of that sort of support of people, business mentoring, the Airbnb, working for Age Concern. I mean, I've developed an empathy to go out and help, but it's also about intensifying the social contact that I need to survive and to prosper. Yes. And flourish.
One of the things that I wanted to come to grips with your situation, Sheldon, is the place of RAP, the Wellness Recovery Action Plan. Has that played a part in the last, several weeks?
Well, it was a very important part of the work that I did at Framework. When it was called Framework, before it became EMBA, I learned a great deal from that Wellness Recovery Action Plan program. One of the critical things that I recognised in facilitating wellness recovery was that one has to be personally responsible for one's health and well-being and mental health. I guess I had always looked to somebody providing a magic pill for me, the professionals being able to sort it out. I think that acknowledgement and awareness that I was personally responsible for my well-being was pretty important.
Well, you're not a blamer. You're not someone who stands up there and blames everyone else for your own, misfortune or fortune or whatever. You seem to me to be a guy who, as I say, puts more pressure on himself than others put on him. And, that's counterproductive, isn't it?
Well, I think that reflects perhaps my own self-confidence and my own capabilities. It's important for me to do well so that I can sort of bolster my confidence and esteem.
I wonder too, in a practical sense, what that 6 weeks in hospital did, because you had two ambulance deliveries, didn't you, to the ED? And then you spend time in not to Fiji Tawhara, but in the older folks' mental health unit.
Yeah, the Fraser McDonald unit. Well, the sequence of events was that I went into Fraser McDonald unit, ambulance, emergency departments have been just in the last 10 days. So the 6 weeks in hospital, I think it's a shock to go into any hospital, really, but particularly the unit that I was in. I don't want to go into any great detail, but somebody has said to me since I was discharged that I shouldn't underestimate the shock and the stress of going into such a unit like that.
Is it very much different to Te Whiti? Because you visited me in Te Whiti Tawhiri, haven't you? And is it very different?
Well, I think the fact that it's also a dementia ward, an Alzheimer's ward. In fact, the majority of patients in the unit were experiencing dementia and Alzheimer's. And so that restricted, I think, the amount of contact, of quality sort of contact and chat and, you know, just general quality of and stimulation.
Yes. Yes. Why did you need the ambulance? Was that something that did you call the ambulance, or did you get referred?
Well, that's happened in the last couple of weeks, James.
Yes. Yes.
And I guess the story behind that is that I began feeling very unwell. On the first occasion, I took a walk to the pharmacy to pick up a prescription, and just in the 5 or 10 minutes of walking around the streets, I felt quite unwell, and I sort of just spontaneously said to the pharmacist, "Have you got a blood pressure, something to measure my blood pressure?" And she said, "Yes, we can help out with that." And it turned out that my blood pressure was pretty high, much higher than it normally would be. And so that was something that worried me. In fact, she said, "You know, I'm inclined to ring the ambulance right away." And I said, "Well, I can go and see my doctor or check things out." I wasn't able to see my doctor, and later in the day I was feeling very, very unwell, and so I called Healthline and consulted them and asked them, told them how I was feeling, what some of the symptoms were, and they rang the ambulance on my behalf. And so I was taken into ED and checked out, had heart monitoring and blood pressure monitoring and x-rays and a scan, and that was very reassuring.
One of the things that I wanted to sort of know is, during the last 4 months or so, have you reached out? Have you talked to people about the situation you found yourself in, or find yourself in?
Oh, I certainly reached out to friends and shared it with family. And obviously, since leaving hospital, I've had support from a team, a very good team, including a psychiatrist and a psychologist and a mental health nurse. So there's been a good degree of support. But it's a tough road. I think one of my realities is when I get depressed and anxious, I don't find living on my own quite as easy.
It can be very isolating, can't it? That sort of feeling, being alone and feeling alone are two different things. But you know, feeling alone can be very harrowing. I think you used the word harrowing in your intro. How do you think you get out of this? I mean, what sort of, where do you get your strength from?
Well, I think you've got to rely on your own strength, the support of friends, the team who are sort of advising me. Yes, it does require great strength, and there have been occasions where that strength has sort of waned somewhat. But I think one of the critical things is that it's important to get out and pursue hobbies, pursuits, meet people. And that's often difficult when you're feeling, when your confidence is knocked But I've been out on the tennis court, played a game yesterday and felt great about that. I've been playing, taken up a new sort of tennis pursuit, which is called pickleball, which is very popular in America and is becoming more popular here in New Zealand. And I've had a couple of sessions of pickleball. It's pretty demanding when you're, you use the word strength, James, but when one's strength is a little compromised. But yeah, pickleball is it gets the old endorphins going.
Sounds very interesting.
Shall we take a music break, James,
yeah,
and come back? What have you got for us, Declan?
Well, I've picked some out today that I think you might particularly enjoy, but I'm going to start it off with a track from Alanis Morissette, and this has just come out on one of her new albums this year, and she talks about feeling crushed by the demands of daily life. Yeah.
That sounds fairly familiar.
Well, yeah, she sings about feeling like a failure, but smiling through it all, hiding her pain and self-loathing. So I guess it's like keeping that face on. And I just thought of a little quick thing before, while you were conversing, and it's a saying that says, "What others think of us is none of our business."
Yeah.
It's an interesting little saying, isn't it? Because we're always so worried about what other people will think. But anyway, here's Alanis. I'm going to shut up. You'll always take it from us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here on Tuesdays from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 FM.
To keep it together.
Well, this is Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. Very different show today in that I'm being interviewed from a distance from Hamilton by phone. Broadcaster James King is on the line. James, you're going to give us some more of these penetrating questions.
That's exactly right, Sheldon. One thing I do want to say right from the get-go is that you are incredibly brave, and I have a great deal of admiration for you for standing up and telling it like it is in your experience, and I just think you're to be applauded for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I did say in the intro that perhaps my experience is fairly extreme in terms of anxiety and what has happened to me. I mean, being hospitalised and having to, call in the ambulance service to go to the emergency department. But I think it underlines just how toxic anxiety can be and how careful we have to be to try and keep a lid on it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why it's important to sort of being able to recognise the warning signs of anxiety and recognise it for what it is, and that it will pass, I guess. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it's going to pass, but it actually does in the end. Which brings me to this word hope. Where do you stand on hope? What does hope mean for you?
Well, I was asking that very question of you, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Hope is obviously very significant. It's a small word, obviously, which has a huge meaning. I have to admit that perhaps I haven't been too strong on hope. I've been encouraged to remember that I have recovered before, and that certainly gives me hope. I think that obviously the length of time that it takes to recover, the circumstances that occur when there is burnout, I mean, if you have to go to hospital, that tends to sort of shatter one's hope. And I think the sooner I can get back into community and my interests, and you know, taking a risk to get out on the tennis court or taking a risk to come to the radio show, my hope is sort of improved, I guess, if that experience is a good experience, is a successful experience. One of the things I think that depression does is it makes me very critical of my performance, if you like, and that can undermine one's hope and one's recovery, actually.
Yeah, it does that. It's corrosive and eroding when it gets to that sort of level. But I think, you know, with the things you do, Sheldon, the little incremental things, the going out to play tennis, the visiting friends, playing bridge, calling people up, texting them, or whatever. I think those are all great things and great qualities. So I think you should celebrate who you are rather than be critical all the time of what you do and how you do it and so on.
Well, it's lovely of you to say that, James. Yes, I do have to celebrate, and I think that all comes from loving oneself. You know, it comes from what my view is of me and that sort of thing. But the depression does tend to foul up my view of myself and makes me very sort of critical and judgmental.
That's why it's important to listen to your friends, Sheldon, who know you and who, you know, have your best interests at heart. And I think we spoke about hope a few years ago on your show, and I think that you know, it's fundamentally important, this thing hope, to recovery. You can't have recovery without hope, and so that's something that I wish you to have. But I also like to think that I hold hope for you as well.
Yeah, well, there's a lot, that's quite a saying in mental health, isn't it, that somebody will hold the hope for the person that is experiencing mental health, who might be depressed, who might be anxious. So the hope is held by the other person, and certainly, James, you're one of those people, Declan as well, who holds the hope for my recovery.
I remember back a couple of weeks ago when you started back on the show. I remember you saying, I hope you don't mind me saying, but I remember you saying that you were very nervous about and very anxious about going back on the show because you were worried about the quality of your performance. And that was before you even got into the studio. But I think you did a great job for someone who had these experiences. You did a great job. Did you finish the show, that first show back, and think, yeah, I did do a good job? Or was it more criticism?
I think it was a mixture of feeling that perhaps I wasn't quite up to scratch, but I patted myself on the back for taking the risk, for getting into the studio. And I think that's one of the very important things about the journey is taking some risks, is, you know, chancing your arm and trying to certainly play down some of those thoughts that I tend to have, you know, that I may not be able to articulate, may not be able to respond, may have to, you know, sort of shut the show down and say, well, we'll just play music. And to me, that would be kind of an example of failure, I guess.
I just jump in there and say that I've said to Sheldon many times, and you know, that when we come into the show, don't worry about, you know, you just look after yourself. I've got the technical side sorted. So I give them those little pep talks before we come in and that sort of thing. So that's one less thing for him to worry about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think one of the important things that I've learnt, James, is really how to train my brain to stop worrying. And one of the very good ways of doing that, I think, is writing things down. And in the Wellness Recovery Action Plan program, we always talked about journaling. And I guess to some extent I was sort of parroting that. I didn't really understand what journaling was. And one of the things that I have done during this episode is to start to write things down.
Yes.
And it says here in a little article that I have in front of me that when you are training your brain to stop worrying, this technique of writing things down could be the most valuable thing you can do.
Absolutely.
You know, if your brain...
You do all the right things, Sheldon. you know what I mean? You do all the right things. You get out and about, you volunteer, you play your tennis, you do the show. You have a network of friends. So you do all the right things. It's just this damn depression that sneaks up on you and tackles you. It's confounding, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly confounding, and I think after a period of flourishing and functioning and being happy with what I was doing and feeling confident in my own independence, heading off to Waiheke Island to work on my place over there, and often doing it on my own and feeling really comfortable with, you know, just I guess, finding a happy place there, sitting on the deck and watching the fantails and the native birds and the progress that, you know, the garden that I was developing. When there is a threat of losing that, I think what I need to do is to keep it in perspective and say, well, you know, this is just a passing sort of feeling and I'll be fine. But I tend to, dare I use that word, catastrophize.
There's a great little thing I've seen there, which I like to try and live life by, and that is worrying is dealing with the perceived outcome, a negative outcome of something that hasn't yet occurred. And 9 times out of 10, we'll stress over something and it all works out.
Well, I think too that I tend to worry about the future, which, and you know, there's that little saying that the past is history, the future is a mystery, and the present is a gift. And so I need to grasp that gift of the present and just enjoy the moment.
I said earlier that you do all the right things, and something that I think's been absent from your talk today is the place of meditation. You were doing a lot of mindfulness and meditation. Is that something that's fallen by the wayside, or you're still doing it? What's the situation there?
Well, I think the thing that complicated the benefits of mindfulness and meditation was the extent of the medication, the pills that were prescribed. And I'm certainly not blaming anyone, because probably at the time of my going into hospital, I needed some significant amount of medication. But the medication sort of frustrates, I think, the strength and benefit of meditation and mindfulness, and also even breathing, because, you know, the brain is somewhat dulled, it's a bit fogged, and I find that those natural sort of pursuits that I had adopted, there's one here, the calming breath, which I've been introduced to, but I've certainly been doing breathing for some years. But this calming breath, you know, isn't necessarily so effective when you've got the sort of intrusion of medication.
Yes, yes. I found that with the medications that I've been on from time to time. I'm in a better position now with my medication, so I'm not so foggy. But yes, the medication is a one to watch.
Shall we take another music break, James?
Yeah. Go for your life.
I'm just going to chuck another little thing in here that I try to live life by. It doesn't always work. 90% of what we worry about won't happen. 5% we can change, and the other 5% is going to happen anyway. So they say that the odds are stacked in our favour. Oh, I do hope so. Anyway, Marvin Gaye, I know that Sheldon's really into his rhythm and blues.
Yeah.
You are, aren't you?
Yeah.
Can you guess what the song's going to be?
No.
Sexual Healing from Marvin Gaye. Can't hold you much longer.
Marvin Gaye and Sexual Healing. You're with 104.6 Planet FM. Let's Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio. We broadcast live from 12:30 to 1:30 every Tuesday.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown, and that's technician Declan Curran. And I'm being interviewed today, a little bit of a different approach to Take It From Us by James King, who's in Hamilton. James, you've got another penetrating question, I guess.
Another penetrating question. I was going to ask about, we were talking about hope earlier, I was going to ask you about something that leads on from hope, and that is where you find, what sort of tips do you have to beat this depression? And John Kirwan, I think, says on his website that even the smallest steps make the biggest impression, which is quite interesting, and it's true. Even the smallest steps can mean a lot. Those little missions in life that that you commit yourself to can work wonders.
Yeah, well, I had a look at depression.org.nz the other day, and I would certainly commend that website to anybody that is addressing depression. There are some great tips there, and one of the things that I've written down, you talk about taking steps. I've learnt that to take one step at a time is the important thing to do, to prioritise that particular step and focus on that and not think about all the other things that have to be done.
That's right. Sorry, go on.
Well, you've asked me about the sort of tips that I've been sort of pursuing, health techniques and tactics. I mean, obviously, there is the medication, which to some extent has its benefits, but I think it has its downsides and its side effects as well. But I think it's very important to get support from a psychologist or a counsellor, or wrapping a team around yourself so that it addresses any threat of isolation. I mean, support from friends and family, getting back into hobbies like playing tennis and bridge and the new game of pickleball that I have mentioned. Breathing has been a bit of a salvation, I had a very good day yesterday as a result of being reminded that I had been told to breathe for 15 minutes before I go to sleep. I get into bed and do 15 minutes of breathing exercises before sleep.
We breathe all the time. What does focusing on your breathing, how does that work?
Well, I think it's a very good way of calming oneself down, of supporting your general well-being. And I've got a little technique here called the calming breath, or alternatively called first aid for stressful situations. And I thought we could run through this, in that it's just a little guide to using breath as a calming technique. So I sit comfortably in a chair. I place my hands on my legs, palms up, gaze softly into the front of you, which is the instruction, and then take a gentle breath in through your nose, gently hold the breath briefly, and then slowly release it through the mouth. Continue with this breathing for 2 to 3 minutes, the worst will be over. So it's a good idea. It is a good idea to actually do it much longer than that. So this is something that I practice each day, I think that it's the breathing generally is a very important resource.
And what are the sort of manifestations or the positive manifestations of doing these breathing exercises? What does it do to your mind? Does it slow it down? Does it
it's generally about achieving calmness. And often that calmness will result in other sort of stress manifestations being relieved as well, and so it leads to general well-being.
They talk about there being four aspects to your life: the tinana, or body, the spirit, or otherwise known as wairua, and the social circle, and the mind. Would you say you've got the balance across those four elements right?
Probably not at the moment, James. But I've probably placed greater emphasis on my physical health, the body, in order to be able to continue to play sports. I've played sport all my life, and I suppose you've got to look after your body if you want to do physical exercise. And I was saying to somebody after my tennis game yesterday, we were talking about weight gain and that sort of thing, and I said, well, one of the things that encourages me to try and remain at a reasonable weight is the importance of tennis to me and being able to play tennis. And I feel that if I put a lot of weight on, it might deny me that chance to play tennis and to play other sports for the benefit of well-being.
Well, you're not a fatty, Sheldon. You're in pretty good nick, given your advancing years.
Well, yes, those advancing years.
Advancing years. Yes, it's interesting because it, you think of these things and you take them for granted, things like breathing. And when you actually start to focus on it, it does relax the mind, it does relax the body, and that's got to be key to living not a stress-free life, but living a life where you can actually survive the stress by using these pretty simple techniques.
Yeah, well, I suppose one of the things you say, survive the stress, one of the things that I wanted to underline is just how toxic stress and anxiety can be.
Yes.
Just how important it is to maintain a level of calmness and be gentle on oneself, be kind to oneself and empathetic and compassionate to oneself. These are all sort of values that I guess I've only learnt in the last decade or so, and it would have been great to have had them introduced to me very much earlier in life.
I agree. It's a sad thing that we don't get to know about a lot of this stuff until we're in our adult years and really struggling. You know, it'd be great to have meditation and mindfulness in schools. It would be great to have greater awareness about some of these things before they actually become a problem for someone.
Well, I think certainly mindfulness is being taught in many schools, and I'm sure that the government's policies are in support of mindfulness and meditation. In terms of myself, I think it would have been great to have understood the benefits and had them introduced earlier in my life. But I'm very grateful that I have been able to access them and get benefits from them.
Yes, yes. Do you think that you've got, or you're in a position now, as opposed to six or eight weeks ago, that you're in a better position now to be able to tackle what may be considered stressful?
Yeah, I think so, James. I mean, I've got quite a few resources in the old kitty, I just have to discipline myself to use those every day, that's just very, very important. As I said, with the calming breath, important to do it every day, even if you don't feel as though you need to.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what gets me wondering is every product we buy comes with an extensive manual, or you can download it. Where's the manual for humans when we're born? There's no sort of user manual. You know what I mean?
What do you think about that, James?
Yes, I think he's right. It was one of the few times he'd be right, too.
How rude.
But he, sorry, Dick.
I'll let you off.
I think he's right. We don't come with an instruction manual. There's so much that our parents don't tell us about living life as an adult. You know, they don't talk to us about tax, about sex, about relationships. These things get lost in the wash as you sort of go on in years.
Well, even more important, I think, is to receive that nurturing and that love and that feeling that there is support and there's somebody there. I probably have to admit that that was a bit lacking in my upbringing, even though there was some very, very positive aspects of my early life.
When you can take
something to consider for parents, I think, bringing children up to give them a sort of a slice of that mindfulness and meditation or physical exercise. And what we've got, so many kids who are obese now because they're not practicing mindfulness, they're not practicing sport or recreation in the same way as you and I used to back when we were kids.
Yeah, well,
I'm so under the computer all the time.
I'm so impressed with my own son as a father of my two grandsons, and just he's there for both of them. He's introducing them to all sorts of new activities: BMX riding, tennis, hiking, biking, and he is there encouraging them and supporting them and complimenting them. And I think that's going to be a major investment.
That's so
in their
important
welfare.
Sheldon. Yeah. It can't be underestimated.
Yeah.
I think of my own childhood where I had hypercritical parents at times. It makes you a little bit fearful. It makes you a little bit anxious as you develop in life. Those messages you get right from the start can be very damaging.
And I think that it's very important for any anxiety in a younger child to be identified and addressed, and the child be given assurance that this is quite natural. It's quite natural to feel a bit anxious if you're going to the BMX track for the first time or you're going to a rugby weigh-in. And I think that's what I lacked. I've been thinking back on that early life, and that's something where reassurance is just so important.
But I was just going to say, I think going back to, as we've gone through the generations, we've learnt more, we've perhaps had more tools, maybe a bit more laid back. But I think too, if you're growing up and your parents aren't fully there, they've maybe split up or there's some sort of conflict, it's very easy for the children to take that on board and blame themselves and what have I done to cause this type thing. So a whole lot of stuff there. I think our communication skills are certainly a lot better nowadays.
Well, and we also have access to so many resources in terms of well-being and health and mental health.
But something I want to throw in there too is, you know, sometimes I go out and I leave my phone behind, go out in my scooter, get some fresh air, and people go, oh, I couldn't get hold of you. And I go, there's times through the day where you just need to back away from technology. Even when I get a message come in, I don't just run for the phone.
Yeah.
You need that downtime.
Let's pass it back to James. We're getting close to a deadline, James, I think a couple of minutes.
We do.
Very, very good. I'll consider myself unemployed for the next couple of minutes then.
I was just encouraging you to perhaps pop in a last question or make a comment.
Well, can I just make a comment about happiness and things that you might, you know, achieve through? I was just looking at a website the other day saying, eat mindfully, spend time outside, meditate, focus on one task at a time, feel the feelings, and create something. And you do all of that, Sheldon, so you know what you're doing, mate.
And I think it's very important to each day with your interactions with other people to take that time out for yourself just to say, you know, I've got friends, I say, I don't want to be contacted between these hours. This is my Netflix thing. If you don't ring me before 9:30 at night, you'll have to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, well, creativity, I think, is a very significant asset for recovery, and it certainly worked for me some years ago when I got involved in bone carving and jewellery.
It back up.
I'd like to think that there's a bone carving school somewhere close in the city, but that's something I might need to explore.
As James Farnham said, take the pressure down.
Yes.
One of the things that I have discovered is Lego, and I've been doing a bit of Lego with my grandson and my son, and I think that's got the potential to be creative and calming.
Don't you start going into these competitions now, will you?
I haven't got quite that far. I'm just a novice.
You're a worry. I don't know what we're going to do with you. No, you'll be all right. We'll keep an eye on you.
Okay, then. Thank you, James, for your contribution to Take It From Us.
Ka kite.
See you, James. That's us for another week. Go and get some sun. Keep out of the wind.
Beautiful
and enjoy
day.
Your week. Yeah, I reckon. See you next week.
Bye. If you disrespect everybody that you run in.